Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guests are Daniel O'Halloran, president of O'Halloran Group, and Scott Wellman, CFO of Hardwood Products and Purin Medical Products. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, David.
Well, you know, we're going to be talking about some interesting stuff today. Oh, we're going to make it interesting, right? That's what we're going to do, right? Well, Dan, you've assured me that you and our guests will here make this exciting because we're going to be talking about captive programs for benefits.
Correct?
So what in God's name is a captive program for benefits?
Well, David, first of all, there are lots of different captive programs. Some are really tax plays on property and casualty insurance and life insurance, and that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about a captive for health insurance as an option, really, for mid-size employers. And really, all a captive is an insurance company owned by the members for the sole benefit of the members.
So it's basically an internal group of people that get together that protect themselves.
Absolutely. The programs we deal with are heterogeneous, meaning it's all different kinds of industries, but homogeneous in that they all think alike. That they finally got their last renewal from a fully insured carrier, and it's another 22% or 28%, and they've had enough and have to look for something other than that. And, you know, we do have a good program that allows them to implement programs that absolutely control cost over time.
So let's break that down a little bit. So we all know about the big programs, right? So we got Aetna and Anthem and medical insurance through major carriers here in the state. This is something that is not only within the state, but it's outside the state. So I think we need to break this down a little bit so people understand. So tell the difference between, so a captive group that you're talking about is a group of companies that get together that are like-minded. So individual insurance brokers sell basically insurance to all. How is it different than like a group that just sells insurance? Break that down a little.
Yeah, it's very different. And, you know, I've sold insurance for a long time, and I've dealt with the Harvards, the Aetnas, the Anthems of the world, and, you know, had good experience with them. But it's come to the point where the cost increases are just killing business, and more importantly, they're really hurting middle class of America. All of their pay raises now go toward paying their increased contribution to health insurance. So we like, you know, companies that want to think out of the box and control this huge expense. As we'll hear later, you know, this is probably, in most companies, the second or third line item, expense line item. It's a huge dollar. So the plans that we deal with, they're governed by ERISA, which is federal regulation. Insurance in general is governed by states. They each have their own insurance commissioner and their own set of rules. When we're governed by ERISA, it gives us a lot of plan flexibility to implement things to assure that the employees are getting, most importantly, the best care possible at the right place for the right price. Health insurance or health care is something that, as consumers, you know, we don't shop for. We shop for everything else in our lives, but not health care. So it's a big problem. And as I said, the impact is just tremendous on take-home pay. A lot of our clients that have been in the program now, which is in year five, have actually had their rates stable or go down, which is unheard of. You know, earlier this week, I was in the office. I do have some fully insured clients. I received two renewals. One was a plus 37% and another plus 45%. And, you know, delivering that message to small business owners in Maine, it's a really hard thing to do.
So when somebody goes into a captive plan versus a regular plan, is there a difference in what they get for coverage? Or is there a difference in regards to catastrophic care or things like that?
No, there really isn't. You know, usually first year when someone goes into a captive plan, their coverage mirrors the plan they were coming from. You know, again, be it Harvard Pilgrim, Aetna, Anthem, you know, we can have similar deductibles, copays, maximums, and so forth. Then over time, we put together a plan to help them implement cost-saving techniques. And again, we tell them there's no silver bullet. How we discuss this with clients is, for years, what we've become accustomed to in health insurance is 60 days before your renewal, you get that renewal from the insurance carrier, you go in and say, what am I going to do? The price went up. I'm either going to increase deductibles, increase copays, increase employee contributions, and me, Mr. Employer, is going to pay more, none of which are good. So they come to that decision, they put it to bed, and another 10 months, they do the same thing over and over again. What we're telling our clients is, like anything in your business, you need to look at this strategically. So let's try to put aside the one-year spend and look at what you're going to spend over the next 10 years and how we can attack that and implement programs that over time, without question, will save you tons and tons of money.
Is this program for everyone?
It is not for everyone. I would say for every five potential members that I talk with, and again, our target size is employers with 50 to 500 lives, and there's a lot of reasons for that being our target. And I can usually tell within 10 minutes if it's the right thing for this employer or it isn't. Some of them like having a fixed cost program, regardless of the fact that it may be going up. Others don't have the foresight to look out strategically 5 or 10 years. They're trying to put out fires today. And others may not have the resources to dig in and do what we need to do to make these plans work. So I can usually tell pretty quickly. You know, again, we want the employer that got their last fully insured renewal. They slam their hand down on the desk and say, I've had enough. I need to do something else.
And need to do something different. Scott, tell us a little bit about, first of all, how this came about, how you learned about it, and second, what it's done for your organization.
We started with the captive, I think, 3 years ago now. And it came about, we were actually not the target customer entirely. We were self-insured previously, have been for 30 years as a company, and we're at the large end of the size that Dan looks for. We've got almost 500 employees. So we'd been self-insured, but the self-insured market, you still have reinsurance you buy, and it's not a pleasant experience to go through the renewal. And we were sick and tired of that, but we had to make some changes in our plan because our costs had been going up and up and up, and we didn't want to keep raising rates on our employees and keep doing all that stuff. So we made some changes, and this was the year after I had made the big changes to the plan, and this came about where we're at a meeting with our third-party administrator, Patient Advocates out of Gray, and they brought us the information about this captive. And a lot of the things they were doing were the things that I was already doing in my plan, and I just kind of jumped into it as believing this was the right partnership. What they wanted to do and what I wanted to do were going to work together, and they had some scale and access to things that I hadn't seen that I could kind of bring into our plan. And the fast forward to 3 years later, we've had 3 years consecutively of no premium increases for any of our employees, deductibles decreasing, and adding benefits. I would guess that that's not what most people have in their plans. I actually am really passionate about this. I love our health plan at our company. And one key thing that Dan said on people wanting to do this or being able to do this, you have to be willing to put time in. You have to be willing to research this. You have to be willing to understand it because it is another part of your business. This is a business line for any of these companies. It's millions of dollars in our case that we're looking at, but it's also 500 employees in their healthcare, and we now make sure that they get the best care they can, and they don't overpay, and we don't overpay. Everyone wins, and when they get their raise, it's actually a raise. They keep their money, and we're not taking more from them each year to give them a lower level of care like traditional insurance.
What type of education did it require for the employee? Because they're so used to seeing an Anthem card or a Aetna card or a basic insurance card.
I've talked to a lot of other companies about the education part. We've been self-insured, and it's always said a different name on the card. But as far as going to the doctors and getting your care, there's no difference. Your provider, there's a network that's there, and it, really in the back end of it, it's very similar to what all the other, the big network, the big nationwide providers have. So you're still going to be able to go and access your doctor. The education that we've had to do is more about understanding the impact of the decisions you make and your healthcare on the whole group. Everyone now in our organization understands that if they make decisions that become very expensive for healthcare, that that impacts their rates, that impacts the company, that impacts everyone that works with them, and is going to impact how much money they can take home at the end of the year. We don't do that to scare people. We don't do that to want to punish people, but we want the full disclosure so they can understand what it is. That's the bigger education part. And then starting to educate them on how to shop for healthcare, how to make better decisions, how to take care of themselves. And there have been so many things that because of working with the captive, we've brought in and added to our health plan that have allowed us to continue having the costs either decrease or stay flat while adding more employees. So really have a negative trend on our expenses, which we're very proud of. Our employees like, because they're getting good care and not paying more. And unfortunately, that's more the exception than the rule most places out there right now.
Dan, when we're talking about educating from a broker perspective, you know, bringing this information to organizations across the state or across the country, what do you find is the biggest block to employers understanding or moving forward with believing that a captive is right for them?
The biggest block is that people are used to doing the same old thing, and they're very comfortable doing the same thing. So we have to demonstrate the benefit of getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. And I say this respectfully to HR professionals, because I think HR professionals, you know, what used to be a staff of five is now a staff of one or two. They have a lot on their plate, a lot of various serious compliance things to deal with. And their job is really making sure the employees are taken care of and are happy. And lots of times when we talk about this, the early resistance is from HR people, because it's obviously different, it's more work, and it's change. So it's very important that, you know, a lot of our initial conversations are at the CEO, CFO level, because, again, we're not talking about changing the dynamics of their plan. We're talking about changing how it's paid for and how much it's going to cost. So once we get the buy-in at the C-level, it's very important to communicate with the HR professionals that, yes, this is a change. It will require some work, but it's kind of fun. And you can really have impact on employees. And it's critical for us to get the buy-in at all levels in an organization. But again, the simple answer to your question is people are used to doing the same thing. They love their, you know, their Anthem card or their Harvard card or their Aetna card. We have to tell them it's going to be okay. You're still going to get the care. You know, we may channel it to a different hospital that we think may be better for these reasons at a better price. But as the employees, really, year one, it's absolutely transparent to them. They don't know that there's been this big emotional and mental shift toward cost containment.
Well, you know, it's part of, like anything, education, right? And learning and change is hard. Let's be honest. It's hard. It's hard at every level of the organization. We're going to talk more about that in the next segment. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today our guests are Daniel O'Halloran, president of O'Halloran Group, and Scott Wellman, CFO of Hardwood Products and Puritan Medical Products. Today we're talking about captive programs in the healthcare market. Yes, believe it or not, they can be exciting. They can be something that we're going to be talking about. And Dan and Scott here have assured me that they will keep you excited and captivated for the next section here. Yes. Yes, excited and captivated. I did put that with healthcare in the same sentence. But, you know, Dan, one of the things that people and that you emphasize, I should say, is that healthcare costs continue to spiral, right? And there's a lot of change happening to healthcare also right now. You've got the tax bill that had some changes. You've got the individual mandate that is no longer required. You have fluctuations this year that are going to, that we don't even know yet what's going to happen in terms of the healthcare system. So there's a lot of angst in healthcare just in general, right? And that's at a company level, Scott, and then certainly, Dan, at a brokerage level. Talk to me a little bit about how the captive plan can either insulate you from this a little bit, or how it may change, or how it might be something that an organization looks at and says, hey, this might be the way for me.
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right, David. We've seen significant change in the last 5 years in the health insurance landscape, and I would venture to say the next 5 years will be even more change. And what that will be, who knows? You know, one of the big things that has come out of the tax bill is really the availability of people joining or forming associations to secure health insurance, which in theory is going to take down some of the state borders for purchasing, because as mentioned before, insurance is state mandated. I think people are getting excited about that now. In reality, I don't think it's going to have much impact. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners is really not too excited about it because, again, all of their state power of regulation makes it very complicated. And look at it from a risk perspective. When we had the individual mandates and Obamacare, we had millions of people coming into the marketplace for health insurance. And, you know, anyone selling anything, you would think that would be a great thing. We have millions of potential customers. But how many insurance companies lined up and said, we want to write all these policies? I mean, there were three or four around the country. That was it. So I think it, in theory, is great, but I don't think it will have much impact at all. I think what we're going to see, and what people need to remember, that insurance is really a mechanism to pay health care bills. And what we see the root problem is, you know, the insurance companies get blamed for everything, but they're really, in my opinion, a payment mechanism. The problem is the cost of health care, and how do we address that? In Maine, we have a particular problem in that we have, you know, very few medical systems, so no real inherent competition. We have a very old population, aging population, very high population of Medicare and Medicaid, which really everything is against us to keep health care costs down. So employers need to find ways to do that. I was reading in a book last night talking about the impact of health insurance premium and that diminishing wage increases and, you know, showing the breakdown of people's dollars where they go over time. And it's amazing what's happened in the last 50 years. Benefits became very popular really after World War II, when there were some restrictions on wages. And so what employers did at that time is they said, to increase total compensation, we'll add benefits. And, you know, looking back that many years, probably sad they ever did, because it has become a burdensome expense and a trouble area for all employers.
Can the captive system help insulate them from some of these changes?
Absolutely. Again, a captive, all it is an insurance company owned by its members and governed by its members. Of course, we have to follow regulations, and those being ERISA. But the captive members put in various cost containment programs, which Scott has done a ton of, and they can be as simple as, you know, rate differentials for people that use tobacco. You can have different wellness initiatives. You can have on-site biometric screenings. You can, you know, go way down the road where we're going, or when I say we, the captive that I represent, It's a, you know, a big family, so I always refer to it as we. In certain areas around the country where we have enough population, we're actually setting up health clinics because we feel that primary care is the key. Right now, most primary care offices are owned by hospitals. And what they become really is a sales force for the hospital. Primary care visits are not what they were when we were a kid. When you were in there for 30 minutes, your doctor knew you, you knew your doctor. Now they're in and out. And again, that's not a negative commentary on primary care physicians, but it's the system that they're faced with. They're challenged to see a lot of patients, and they don't spend enough time with them. And what happens then is they're referred to a specialist, high cost, or to prescription, high cost, where a lot of that care could be taken, could be done in the primary care setting. So, you know, that's our ultimate goal here in Maine is to get enough people. We have enough people in our captive program in Maine, but unfortunately they're geographically dispersed. But, for example, we'd like to get enough people in the greater Portland area where we can set up an actual primary care health clinic. So people are getting the appropriate primary care, and the care needed after that is directed to the appropriate places, not the most expensive places.
Scott, you know, Dan talks about taking this information and using wellness programs and different things through your organization to maximize the effort, right? To maximize the effort of the team. So two questions. One being, can you tell a story about how this worked in maybe one area?
Yep.
And then second, how do you ensure that things like protections to the employees who don't want to participate, right? Because there is this question of you can't incentivize that penalizes people. Mm-hmm. How do you do that and ensure there's a balance between the two to motivate them in a way that doesn't penalize? So the two questions.
The first one, as far as an example of something that we've done that has been implemented from this process, it would really be to do with diabetes in our population. We have in Maine, in this country, there is a high population of type 1 and type 2 diabetics, and it's a growing expense. And those people that have unmanaged diabetes become huge expenses to the healthcare system as a whole, but also can have horrific consequences to their lifestyle. So what we did is we worked and designed a program. There wasn't something that was a template that we followed really on this one. We said, we've got a problem here. We've got 29 diabetics in our plan, and we need to find a way to better manage their care because they don't have access to specialists being in Dover, Foxcroft, and Guilford, and Maine. So we went and partnered with Tufts Medical Center in Boston, and the head of the endocrinology department at Tufts does telemedicine consults for all of our diabetics twice a year. So Dr. Siegel sees these patients that are on the clock at our employment, and they have a consult with him where they've sent all of their records and all of their tests and everything that they've had done during the year so that he can look and develop a care plan with them. We pay for that 100%. And then what we added on top of that is we said we're going to set up a disease management program specifically for diabetes. And if you're willing to see Dr. Siegel and you're willing to follow his recommendations, then we're going to cover at 100% all of your routine lab work that you need to have done, the extra exams that need to be done. And I don't know what all of those things are. I know that we cover them, but I know typically they've got to have their A1C checked, I think quarterly, to check how well their blood sugar is being managed. Those tests, if you're just going and paying for them, can be $100 a pop at a hospital. Our employees aren't paying for those things. They're going, their medications are paid at a higher percentage, their testing supplies are covered. So we found a way to add more coverage, provided they will follow a plan. And as a result of that, our cost per diabetic, and I hate to always go to the numbers, but that's the best figure that I can use, went from around $5,000 to $6,000 per year per patient to under $2,000 a year per patient. And when you're talking about 30 people, that's a huge savings that everyone benefits from. So that was a pure, let's give them a carrot to do this. If they don't want to participate in the program, they don't have to. There's no penalty to them. They follow the regular plan provisions, and if they go to the lab to have their lab done, they're subject to deductible and coinsurance. But overall in our plan, we've built it on incentives, and really it's economic incentives for choosing the providers or the services that we've found are the best value and the best quality. And I get a lot of flack from maybe large medical systems in the state of Maine, because one thing we've been doing for many years is if people have significant diagnoses that aren't emergent, we're typically sending them to Mass General, to Tufts, to Leahy, to Dana-Farber to get a consult and get a second opinion to see what is going on, to make sure that all the diagnoses are right and find out a care plan. And if our employees are willing to then get their care at that facility, we reduce their deductible to the minimum allowable under an HSA plan, which this year would be $1,350 if it's an individual, or $2,700 if it's a family, which is significantly lower than most places, and we eliminate their coinsurance. So we cover as much as we legally can if they get their care there. We've found that those hospitals are typically highly rated in any of the ratings that are out there. They're world renowned, and none of our employees come back and say, "I can't believe you made me go to Mass General to get my cancer surgery." No, it's the opposite. They come back and say, "I'm really glad you encouraged me to do that." And on top of it, because again, we are 2 hours north of here, we pay their mileage, we put them in a hotel, and we pay for their food. And if it's the consult or the follow-up visits, not the actual procedure, we pay their wages for those days. So they don't lose anything by not being at work and having to drive to Boston. We've found a way to make it as easy for them to get great care. If they choose that they don't want to do that, that's fine. They go to the local provider, they pay the regular plan provisions, and we're fine. But we've also, as a result of doing these things for many years, we now have two hospitals in the state of Maine that like to work with us, and we have direct contracts with them. I can't necessarily name them, but we have direct negotiated contracts, so I can offer the same incentives for all hospital services at more local providers. So we don't want to send everyone everywhere, but in the past, that's been our only option. So we've been working, and I sit down and meet with hospital CEOs and discuss rates and come up with these things so that I can go back to the employees and say, "Hey, we've got more that we can give you, and it's not costing you anything." But financial incentives work in anything. When you tell someone you go here and it costs us less and I'm going to give you $100 and cover it at 100%, do you know what employees do?
Cheer.
And they go there.
Of course.
And they collect their $100 and they're happy. Right. And they get the health care they need.
And plus you got a brand name involved in it as well. You know,
yeah.
Tufts, Mass General, certainly well-known, world-renowned things. Dan, talk to me about that a little bit. Talk to me about how the captive sets that up. Because it doesn't sound that simple, right, for an employer to say, how do I really get in touch with the CFO of a Tufts and actually negotiate a contract? Seriously, how does that work?
Well, you know, actually, the when we talk about captives, the captive we work with is called Pareto Captive, and they're what I like about them, they're an independent captive manager. They're not owned by an insurance company or a broker, so truly independent, and really act as the back office, you know, the CEO suite of the program. And the members that come in, the captive and us as advisors, don't tell all the members exactly what to do. We give them a menu of things that they should think about because everybody's different. Now our program has pretty significant scope. We have just under 550 employers around the country in the program, and that grew by 200 in 2017. So I think, you know, this captive movement is going to be very large in the upcoming years. You know, our average size group is around 120. In total, we have 140,000 people covered. So we're starting to get scope, which allows you to have these discussions with medical facilities. Last week, I was away at an advisors meeting with Pareto, and one of the things that they talked about is they're going to 4 or 5 national surgical centers and talking about direct contracting. So they would make these contracts available to all of the member groups who wanted to take advantage of them. So now that we're getting scope, we can do some really cool things.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. And today our guests are Daniel O'Halloran, president of O'Halloran Group, and Scott Wellman, CFO of Hardwood Products and Puritan Medical Products. Today we're having too much fun talking about captive programs. Dan and Scott are here, and I tell you, this is very interesting information because the reality is I'm not sure a lot of people know about this. And that's why we're here, right? That's why we're here to talk about it. Yep. So one of the questions that typically comes up is, as you mentioned before, Scott, you were in a self-insured plan. Right?
Yes.
And so there are typically groups that come together, forestry groups or medical groups, whatever, that come together that self-insure themselves as a group. How is this different than a typical self-insured plan, either one of you?
Well, I'll give it from my perspective, and Scott can add some insight because he was self-insured and then moved into the captive program. But basically, you know, I'm a big proponent of self-insurance. We have clients that are self-insured. They have to be big enough. Essentially, what the captive is, it allows smaller employers to get all the benefits of self-funding without the risk and volatility. Large employers can handle volatility, and volatility comes in a couple of ways. It comes in rate increases. Now, when we do a self-funded plan, you buy stop-loss premium that protects you against really large claims or a high frequency of claims. So we buy protection in both of those areas. That generally equates to 20 to 30% of your overall cost. So it's not unusual if a stop-loss carrier has a bad year, you could get a 50% rate increase on your stop-loss. But again, remember that's only on a small percentage of your overall spend, so it might impact your, you know, a 50% increase on something that's 20% of your cost would result in a 10% increase, not all that much. But again, there's a lot of volatility, and actually the stop-loss market in 2017 did not have a great year, so I think in the self-funded world, there will be some increases on this year's renewals. The other area of volatility is something called lasers. And what a laser is if we think of the premise of insurance in general, it's to protect against unknown events, okay? So say that I'm in a large group now and it's self-funded, and I have cancer, and it's ongoing, and my claim is going to be $250,000 a year for the next, well, probably as long as I live. You know, so that's known. We know that's going to happen. So what the stop-loss carrier will do is they'll come in and say, okay, the exposure for the employer for everybody is what we call a specific deductible of $25,000. But for Dan, because we know he has cancer, it's going to be $200,000. So that's a, you know, $175,000 delta that the employer has to pick up. So that's, you know, volatility. If you're a, you know, an IBM, no big deal. You know, TD Bank North, no big deal. Chimbro, no big deal. But for a smaller employer, that is a real big deal. So the traditional stop-loss market has come out with programs that will renew saying, you know, we won't give you a laser and we'll guarantee your increase, but still, a lot of volatility. What the captive does, because of our scale, you know, in total, again, 140,000 lives, 150,000, approximately $185 million of stop-loss premium that we're buying in bulk with an insurance carrier gives us a lot of leverage. So the captive has negotiated terms that the largest rate increase anyone will ever get is 30%, again, which sounds like a lot, but 30% on 20% of your overall spend isn't that much. That has happened very few times in the program. And we say you will never be faced with a laser, period. And that is huge. So that totally eliminates the risk and volatility of self-funding on your own. Again, we're huge proponents of self-funding. This is simply a mechanism to give these mid-sized employers the ability to self-fund without risk and volatility.
Is there a reason that you say below 50 doesn't work?
Yeah, the primary reason is that, and one of the real drivers in this whole program and our philosophy is data. Anything on any account under 50 lives in the state of Maine is considered small group. The insurance companies don't give you any claims data whatsoever. Once we hit 50 lives, you start getting a little bit more. Once you get to 100, you get a little bit more, but really never enough. One of the primary mechanisms that we use to develop various cost containment plans that Scott talked about is your own company's specific data. When you're self-funded or in a captive, you know, we have instantaneous reports. We have detailed quarterly reports so you can see trends. You know, we have these problems. We have emerging diabetics. We have X amount of our population that isn't having the appropriate test for their age and gender. You know, we actually use a company called Springbuck that does all our data analytics and predictive modeling. So we can slice and dice this claims data in a million different ways, but it helps us put in cost containment programs that will benefit that specific company.
Scott, to those cost containment programs, talk to us a little bit about what that has required from an organizational standpoint of setting up the time, the energy to that, and what the result from that has been.
The time and the energy is actually a lot less than I expected it to be to put a lot of these containment issues in place. If you're working with good partners, and that's a combination of working with Dan and his company and working with our administrator, we can put things in place that will make a difference and not be extremely complex. A lot of the heavy lifting is done on the other parts of it, but I still put a fair amount of time into it. I design changes, and with the data analytics that he's talking about, I get into that data, and it's not identified by the person or anything like that, but I can see by diagnoses where we're spending money. And then I can tie that into, is it being spent on things at the hospital or is it being spent on pharmaceuticals? And if it's on pharmaceuticals, are there specific ones? And is there some kind of condition that's really impacting our plan? And then we can try and go and actually meet with providers and develop a better treatment plan for those patients that works for the hospital because they know they're going to get paid quickly and paid in full, and also works for us and our patients because it's going to be less expensive and still getting them the right care. So there's a little bit of those things, but it's maybe now that my plan is running well and I have a lot of the stuff in there, maybe 15 to 20% of my time needs to be dedicated to that. But the thing that people need to realize is if you're talking about something that is your second or third highest expense in your entire organization, 15 to 20% of your time isn't that much to manage that. I know that the time that's been spent on it is impacting our employees' lives, but also the bottom line of the company is greatly enhanced by doing these things. It's not Herculean in any means.
Dan, talk to us about how an organization might say to themselves, hey, if this is interesting, it's not distributed in the normal way. As I said before, to be honest with you, I just recently learned about this myself, and heck, I'm in the industry. So, you know, it's interesting that it's almost like this this underground network that is not really well known and yet it has an interesting impact to mid-sized organizations.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of like our secret family, and we don't let everybody in. You know, it has to be, again, the right-minded employer. You know, in Maine, we've got about a dozen companies in the program now. I would anticipate, significant growth this year. The normal health insurance is distributed by insurance brokers and agents that are licensed by the state of Maine. They can contract with the insurance companies and receive proposals. And essentially, if you know, I was a broker and Scott was a broker and we went to any carrier with the same set of data, we'd get the same rates. And we'd put it on our fancy spreadsheet and beat ourselves in the chest and say, why, you know, why is Dan better than Scott? You know, and that's what happens. And a lot of the sales, and, you know, I've benefited from this throughout my career, is, you know, based on relationships and your relationship. And that's what would differentiate me versus Scott, you know, going into a particular client. And so it's relationships. And yeah, there are, you know, certainly varied levels of service that large agents, small agents, and in the middle have, you know, from a technology perspective, human capital perspective, and those things. With Pareto, you know, the model here, again, is that we need the right employers in here to make it work, because each of these employers becomes an owner, an equity owner in this insurance company. And it's distributed by advisors, consultants, and brokers around the country that have gone through very specific training with Pareto. But more importantly, you know, those that have been around, that understand the system, that have done self-funding and can think strategically. You know, and I'm fortunate with Pareto, again, the growth is controlled. And they say to me, you know, Maine is a pretty rural state, Dan. You know, if you're bringing us in the right employers every year, you're the only guy that has it. So it's a great position for me to be in, which was good. I mean, it, you know, I'm not at the beginning of my career, for sure, and it's just nice now to do something that's totally different, has impact, and as you said earlier, believe it or not, it's fun. You know, when we see the results of this, it's fun to deliver the message. And part of that, you know, we kind of joke about it being, you know, a big happy family, is twice a year we have our members meetings in Nashville, because the program is domiciled in the state of Tennessee. The insurance commission there has been great to work with. They're really a proponent of captives. So, you know, 5 years ago when I went to my first members meeting, I took a couple of prospective clients. There may have been 60 of us there. You know, Nashville's a fun place to kick back after you've had your meetings. You know, at this year's meeting, Scott, what do we have, 300-400 people?
At least.
And just the energy and the success stories and relationship building that, you know, my groups in Maine, a lot of times when they have questions on things, like if it's how to, you know, how do I reserve for this or how do I fund this, they don't call me. They call Scott, or they'll call another CFO. And the HR people work together. You know, what's working for you? I'm running into this roadblock. What are you doing? So it is really developed into a nice community.
Scott, talk a little bit about that. Talk about the communication success between the partners.
The biggest thing comes out of those meetings in Nashville. When we go down there, it's twice a year, and I've found that I think the last three or four, I'm speaking on one topic or another to a group of other CEOs, CFOs, HR professionals about something to do with the captive, and maybe a success that we had. But a lot of times it's in the halls afterwards, meeting these people and talking to them and finding out that they've done things that are creative and innovative that I could end up doing, or that they want to know more information about how I was able to put something in because they're in a rural area and struggle with some of the same problems. So you start developing a network of other business leaders that aren't anywhere nearby. They don't have all the same problems or the same strengths, but you work together and you find people that at least are like-minded that really want to do this. I can think of two or three people that I talk to. There are other business leaders. There are a couple of other brokers that I talk to. There are people from the captive that I talk to, whether it's to give them ideas or to try and find things out about how do we manage this. I have a phone call scheduled tomorrow afternoon with actually a broker out of Atlanta, Georgia, to talk about how to develop direct contracting relationships with providers, because their groups haven't done that yet. And it's great to see that what works here can then be shared, and our these other partners of ours can have good results, which then allows all of us to spend less, because as the captive keeps growing and being successful, we're paying less every year. Our employees get good care, and we pay less. There's no negative to it.
No, those are two words that don't normally go together in the same sentence.
Yes.
So we're clear about that, all right? Pay less, better care. No, that's not two words that I normally put together. You know, Dan, I'm going to be frank. Sometimes it sounds too good to be true.
It is. You know, for the right employer, it is too good to be true. We have, you know, many of our clients that moved from fully insured, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, that are actually paying less than they were in their fully insured renewal in 2012 or 2013.
Well, you know what? Sometimes true is real.
Correct.
That's what we're talking about today. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish that!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And today our guests are Daniel O'Halloran, president of O'Halloran Group, Scott Wellman, CFO of Hardwood Products and Purin Medical Products. Today we're having more fun than one should be allowed, talking about medical captive programs. Before we wrap it up, right, we have a couple of takeaways that I'd like people to think about for the show. Dan, how long have you been doing this?
Do I have to really answer that?
No, don't worry. Only all the listeners are wondering.
I actually I started my insurance career with Unum in 1980 and was on the company side for 7 years and then moved back to a family business in Waterville that was sold about 10 years ago, family insurance business, and then got back in the business and said, you know, I've got to find something different. And thank goodness I ran into the crazy guys that run this captive program.
No, it's great. And Scott, tell us about your company.
Yeah, two companies. We are manufacturers in Guilford, Maine. We're actually family-owned and will be 100 years old next year. One half of the company makes ice cream sticks, corn dog sticks, every type of food stick that goes into anything that you'd see. And that's where the company started. The other part of the company, that's where the growth has been lately, actually makes medical products. We make every type of swab you've ever seen at the doctor's office, in a diagnostic testing kit, in industrial cleaning. And that side is Puritan Medical Products. The other side is Hardwood Products. And it's been growing, and we're now up to about 500 employees in Piscataquis County.
Please tell me that you don't get the sticks ever mixed up. That's all I'm asking. I really don't want to think about swabbing with a popsicle stick.
No, just saying. Nope.
Or a corn dog stick, with a little cotton on the end. That just doesn't work for me.
Never happened.
All right, you've assured me there's never been a mix-up.
100%.
Okay, good. Just make it sure.
There's a road between the two factories.
Things happen. I'm just asking. And just for you that are not able to see this, he's turning red. It's perfect. All right, good. No, it's good. So, Dan, as we wrap up this show today, what are a couple of things that you want to make sure that the audience today really gets or takes away from this idea of captive programs?
Well, first of all, it's the idea that change is okay. Don't be afraid of change. And number two, there are options out there. I mean, you know, this captive program, captive programs, I think, nationally will be growing. And number three, you know, as we've mentioned, this is a huge line item for every company, and it needs to be addressed. And certainly looking at alternative solutions helps us. You know, that being said, I, you know, wouldn't be surprised if the fully insured carriers things are going to change. People are going to get real creative over the next 5 years. So it's a great time to look at options and control this cost.
I think that's key, right? Look at options.
Yes.
Scott, what are a couple of takeaways you want to make sure the audience understands?
The first one I want to ensure people is it does really work. This isn't, there's no smoke and mirrors here. You can drastically impact the quality of healthcare and your bottom line by doing this. The second thing I will say, though, is it is like anything else that you are going to have to put some work into it. If all of this stuff were extremely easy, everyone would be doing it, and it would just magically happen. So you really need to be willing to put something into it if you want to get something out of it. And thirdly, it can actually be fun. I love managing our health plan. And I know those aren't words that you hear coming out of people's mouths, but it is great to be able to provide for your employees and the company doing things the right way.
Awesome things. I appreciate both of you being here today. Thank you for being on the show. Of course, you can listen at hrpowerhour.com at any time. Make sure that you link to that. You'll see the information on Daniel O'Halloran, president of O'Halloran Group, and Scott Wellman, CFO of Hardwood Products and Purin Medical Products. And make sure that we are able to connect with them directly at hrpowerhour.com.
Great. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And now your HR tip of the week. Your HR tip of the week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, I'm Beth Smith from VeralDana. The new I-9 form was specifically designed to be easier and more transparent than the old form, but there's still many situations that come up that can pose challenges for human resources. For example, if your company has unpaid interns who get nothing of value other than experience, USCIS has taken the position that you do not need to complete the I-9 form for those unpaid interns. If you're self-employed, you're not required to complete the I-9 form unless you're part of a larger organization, such as a corporation or partnership. As has always been the case, any policies you adopt around completing an I-9 form must be uniformly applied and should follow the guidance available at the USCIS website. For example, I-9 forms do not have to be kept in a separate, locked location away from personnel files, but should be readily available in case of an audit. Finally, any time is a good time to initiate a self-audit of your I-9 forms, since any correction that needs to be made is better made by you as the result of a self-audit than made as the result of a government audit. For any other questions regarding I-9 forms, please feel free to contact a member of the VeralDana Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Ken Lizotte, Chief Imagination Officer of Emerson Group, thought leader and author, discusses his new book, What Would Henry Do? Essays for the 21st Century. Today on our little planet, we live in bewildering times. If Henry David Thoreau were alive today, what advice might he have for HR or other business leaders? Listen to Ken and your host, David Chulo, discuss what he would tell us about HR challenges such as talent management, diversity, and inclusions. We also discuss how David Thoreau might address the current sexual harassment controversy. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success. And stay tuned for Inside Portland with Bob Witkowski.